Hello, and welcome to episode 68 of Golf Pod Kentucky. This is Ethan Fisher coming at you, and we are going to be joined by Blake Hardesty, the director of golf from First Tee of Louisville here shortly. Before we get into our conversation with Blake, we are rapidly approaching the second half of March, as hard as that is to believe, and the first month of tournament season here at Golf House being April. So I wanted to do a quick rundown of some important dates coming up for you all to take note of, regardless of whether you're a professional, amateur, whatever it is, just something to keep on your mind as we get towards the back half of March. But KPGA members and associates, the Deaver Easy Go Spring Member Conference is coming up on Monday, March 27th. Register for that shortly. Junior Tour players, the season kickoff for the Kentucky PGA Junior Tour will be at Oxmoor Country Club on April 1st and 2nd. We are already getting pretty close to our maximum field size there, so if you haven't signed up for that, please do that shortly. The inaugural Kentucky PGA Growth of the Game event is coming up on April 12th. We currently have five section members and associates who are signed up to compete in that. You can donate in one of their names to help generate funding for the Kentucky PGA's Growth of the Game initiatives, as well as a charity that each of the participating members is passionate about. So, for instance, Brandon Rout, our current leader in donations so far, half of the money that gets raised under his name is going to the Breast Cancer Research Foundation. Kyle Sheffer, his funding goes to Ronald McDonald House Charities. Miles Mahan's goes to The Healing Place. Jesse Massey's goes to Cosair Children's Hospital. And then the very own Blake Hardesty that you'll hear from in a minute, his funding goes to First Tee of Louisville. So you can choose to donate now. You can choose to donate based on how many birdies or pars each participant makes the day of on April 12th. But keep note of that, and hopefully we can continue to secure some more funding for that. And then lastly, April 24th is the Hope for Heroes event presented by CSS Mechanical. Professionals, amateurs, and veterans will be teaming up in a fun, friendly four-person scramble event where all the proceeds go to PGA Hope Kentucky. Get registered for that before April 10th. Now then, Blake Hardesty. He is a past winner of the Kentucky PGA's Youth Player Development Award. He's been with the First Tee of Louisville for several years now, and we talk pretty much everything there is to talk about with First Tee of Louisville, from the programming to the golf courses that they're now operating. It is a very fascinating conversation, I think, and if you care about golf in the slightest, this should be an episode that really gets you going and really gets you energized to not just play golf, but to serve your community as well and help grow the game. And it doesn't matter what your background is, you can do that very easily with the First Tee, and we'll talk about all that here. So let's go ahead and dive in with Mr. Hardesty. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome aboard the director of golf from the First Tee of Louisville and one of the bigger Boston Celtics fans not in the New England area, Mr. Blake Hardesty, PGA. Blake, thank you for being here, sir.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Ethan.
Anytime. And, you know, there's a lot of exciting stuff going on within the First Tee. It's kind of crazy, given the fact that you and I started at relatively around the same time compared to where the First Tee is now, compared to when we first got our jobs. But I think to best lay the land in terms of what's going on with you, that organization, let's just start with the basics. So tell me a little bit about your childhood and how you first got exposed to golf.
Yeah. I wish something like First Tee was around when I was a kid. It wasn't. You know, I had some clubs and hit in the yard and things like that when I was younger. But actually, in the seventh grade basketball season, we were playing pickup ball, and a guy hit me midair, and I really bad sprained my wrist, and turns out I could swing a golf club before I could shoot a basketball again, and that's kind of when I got hooked. So then I played 4 years in high school, and we were, me and Chase, our senior year, we won the first two tournaments in school history. Our team did. I think, you know, Chad too from that team, but kind of got hooked, and then ended up finding EKU, and with the marketing degree, my dad was all in on that. So that's kind of how I ended up headed to EKU.
With EKU, talk a little about your experience there. I think a lot of people probably know that I went there as well. So we were both there for 3 years and shared a lot of the same experiences, but everybody's different and has a different pathway there. So can you talk a little bit about your time in Richmond?
Learned a lot, made a lot of connections, a lot of people that I'm still good friends with. I mean, Mahalik was just my best man at my wedding a couple months ago, and met him at EKU. It just kind of helped me pick the path I wanted to go to in golf. Got the chance to do a lot of junior golf, helping out at Gibson Bay and things. And that kind of showed me what areas of golf I liked and what maybe I wasn't as big of a fan of. So the experiences and the connections just were incredible. They benefit me to this day, and I'm sure you'd say the same thing.
I would. And one thing that's interesting is you brought up the fact that you worked at Gibson Bay while you were there, but one of the big banner advertisements with EKU's program or any PGM program is the internship element. And you've got four of those at Eastern. So where did you go for those and what were your experiences like?
First when I went to Shawnee with Craig, and learned a ton because I had, I'd known Craig before I went to school. So he did not hesitate to throw stuff at me. Then I went up to Michigan, Gull Lake View, Stonehenge. That was an interesting experience because it's a very, very resort style place, and we don't have a ton of that around here. Third internship, I went to Persimmon Ridge and worked with Ron. So that was kind of when I dipped my toe in like the private side of things. And again, it was quite a bit different because most of my experience before that was, at Shawnee and Doe Valley. And then my last internship came back and worked with Craig at Shawnee. And that's, I guess, when I got more heavily involved with First Tee the first time around and kind of helping coach and things. But kind of tried to pick places that I felt like I was going to get lots of experience and not just be cleaning golf carts and stuff and get stuff to, better me as a aspiring professional then.
Yeah, and that's really sound advice. I think when people ask me, you, any PGM alumni out there, the best thing to do is always to get involved and to do different things. If you have a well-rounded experience and you do lots of different things, then you're going to be positioned really well when you get out of school and you fall into that bucket. And as you touched on, that last internship at Shawnee kind of prepared you for that opportunity with First Tee of Louisville. So it's 2017, 18. Talk a little about that transition going from intern to full-time employee.
I was lucky. Craig again threw a lot at me when I was at Shawnee. And then he gave me the opportunity to be the assistant at Polo Fields that first year that he operated there, and learned a ton from Andrew. That's probably arguably the most important year in my young career, for like those first couple of years out. Went to Wildwood and got to learn from Blake Watts a lot for the 6 months I was there. And then the first tee position kind of opened up, and just junior golf was always something I was passionate about. And when that door opened, it was hard to not open it and take it.
Yeah, absolutely. And we touched on this earlier, but it really is astounding to think about where First Tee was at that point when you got on board compared to where it is now. I feel like it's almost a completely different organization just in terms of the things that you all have your hands on, what you guys and gals do. It's pretty crazy. So when you first started with First Tee, what were your responsibilities that first year?
So I originally started just as what was called a golf and life skills coach then, which was essentially just coaching classes, making sure everybody was signed up and running the day-to-day setup for classes, working with the volunteers, things like that. So it was very, very basic compared to what I do now.
What was kind of the thing that spurred all this future momentum that came about? I have a feeling that the easy answer would be just saying Deshaun Johnson with his leadership, and we'll talk more about Deshaun later, but can you kind of identify when things started to really intensify in terms of how you all expanded your horizons?
I've known Deshaun, I guess, a little over 10 years now. I met him back early on when I got into golf. So me and him have always had a good relationship, and just the way we are, we both always look for opportunities and where we can grow. With me, we finally kind of had some stability in that role, which allowed us to expand. Before me, program director, golf and life skills coach kind of was a revolving door to some degree for a little bit. So it's hard to get momentum when that, your staff changes quite a bit. But that, and then along with just the updates and curriculum and stuff coming down from HQ has made it easier to grow and build our brand in the community. But Deshaun's been incredible with that. I opened a few doors that maybe he had had trouble getting into, just, my connections in the golf industry, but it's really just the growth in the community and people knowing who we are and what we are has made that easier.
You don't have to give me exact numbers, but at that point in like 2019, when you were a golf and life skills coach compared to now, how many different kids do you believe you all have touched in that 4-year span?
So the first year, 2018, I came on in July, and we saw basically 700 kids in 2018 total. Last year we served 1600,
Wow.
so just under 1,000 more. Last year we had 600 unique different kids in programming. We've added our golf for girls classes. We started that at Shawnee, which Olivia runs. It's all female instructors, all female participants, to give them a safe, friendly environment to learn in to get more girls in golf. We added Women in Golf Day off that, where, Sally was one of the speakers the first year, to expose girls that, hey, you don't have to be the best player. There's other avenues to, be successful as a woman in golf. The development tour, which is kind of our segue to get kids from junior league to, your all's junior events and stuff to get them comfortable playing more of a tournament atmosphere. This is the third year for it now. Workshops where we've had tons of area pros and reps and stuff come in and talk to the kids again about, you don't have to be the best player to enjoy working in golf and, expose them to different things that our career paths, even as engineers and stuff in golf. And then our winter practices that we get launch monitors now, that kind of arrived when COVID hit. Just gives our kids extra opportunities to, not sit around for 6 months and not touch a club. They get to make swings, they get to come in and, improve on their game and continue learning and building relationships. Just all that stuff has kind of arisen over the last couple of years and additions, and it's been awesome.
I think it's interesting that you bring up COVID during this whole segment. Obviously, people point to the pandemic for being a lot of the reason why golf's participation has spurred so much in the last 3 years. But the reasons you talked about that alone, regardless of whether you have a global pandemic or not, is going to go a long way. So do you have any real thought as to like why these combination of factors have all worked so well, not just with your all's favorite, but the game as a whole?
Well, I know for us, we were one of the first youth service providers that were cleared to, get back to programming. I think it was like June 15th or whatever that Monday was. We were allowed to go. So, while a lot of people, basketball, contact sports were, up and, waiting to see when they could get back, we were able to get back with the kids, get back with clubs in their hands first. And speaking of that, golf, like you said, it was one of the few things that, was generally acceptable and accepted early in those days with the pandemic. So I think that was just, it got everybody outside and got a lot of new eyes and on the game and lots of new clubs in people's hands. And you know, you and me both know it doesn't take a lot to get hooked. It just kind of the exposure.
Yeah, it just happens once you've got a club in your hand, and that's what you guys are so good at, is just putting kids in the position to succeed and let them go from there. And we talked about him, but Deshaun Johnson, he is a big reason why I think that there's been so much success, and his passion is really contagious. Past podcast guests heard him back in the very early days of the show in 2021. And you know, it's not hard to see why people would be really enthusiastic about playing as a kid or just volunteering your time as an adult once you get across Deshaun Johnson and have a conversation with him. So what exactly has Deshaun meant to not just the first tee, but I think golf in Louisville as a whole ever since he took the reins there?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we preach it a lot, but he brings diversity to the game. He brings a different point of view with his path into the game, not start until he was what, almost 30, I think. But yeah, he is very passionate about it, and he's passionate about getting the clubs in kids' hands that normally wouldn't have the chance to. He's been a great leader. It's been hard the last couple of years. He used to be kind of a one-man show back in the day, and now we have, I think, 9 full-time employees now, if you count the head pros. So yeah, he's had to learn to delegate a little bit and you know, let everybody else's decision making come through. But at the same time, we've put together a great team of people that all care about the kids and know kind of what the core mission is. So it's made his life easier on that front. But yeah, just he gets it.
He does. And I'm glad you mentioned the head pros, because that's a good segue for next conversation topic, which is the acquisition of Shawnee and Bobby Nichols. So let's begin with Shawnee, first of all. We'll stay away from Bobby Nichols for a couple of questions, but how did the first tee acquiring Shawnee come about? What were those conversations like, and what ultimately pushed that to the finish line where you guys could manage that facility?
Yeah, so obviously we manage it in partnership with Louisville Metro. You know, Craig was leaving after his, what, 15 years managing that place. The conversations really were, can we do it? Do we want to do it? And what are the benefits? And, you know, we started looking at who we had in place and the knowledge base and everything. And we're like, okay, well, you know, we know enough about what's going on to be successful if we want to do it. But really what it came down to was our pros in the area are great to work with. You know, we have more on-course access than a lot of other chapters, but operating that facility gave us even more freedom over getting the kids on the course, getting them access to the range, things that, you know, are key to what we do. And then it also gives us some sustainable income to not only put back into the courses, but to help, you know, fun things that we do with the kids.
You touched on the partnership with Louisville Metro, and I think this might get confusing sometimes with people when they see your all's name on those two golf courses, as well as all the Metro Park signage. So, can you kind of expand on the relationship that you have with the city government?
Yeah, I mean they're partners at all the Metro courses. So we operate it in partnership with them. We basically run the golf shop, and then they provide all the maintenance and things like that to help keep the golf course in the condition that it needs to be for play. They've been great partners. You know, it's been, I think, mutually successful for us, based on the numbers that I've seen and everything. So it's been great. They do a good job. Bobby Nichols, not to get too off ahead of myself, but it was in great shape last year. Matthew Poff did a killer job. And you know, that helps us sell the product when the golf course is in good shape.
No doubt. And I had never played Bobby Nichols until I went there about this time last year. And I had heard a lot of like critical things about it, but based on what it was like in 2022 and the early signs of what it's going to be like in 2023, you never really would have known about that. So with Bobby Nichols, I imagine a lot of it is kind of the same as it was with Shawnee when it came to how the contract got signed and all that. But was there anything unique with acquiring that place compared to Shawnee?
Not really. It was just expanding operations, which is kind of I got promoted in the mix of all that just as we grew to multiple facilities to make sure Deshaun, didn't have to front all that on his back. But Bobby Nichols, the location, it's in an underserved area where there's not a lot of youth offerings out there. So it kind of was a no-brainer when you're looking at the area and the kids and families that we can get in touch with out there. And I mean, they've got a dedicated group of golfers out there that are awesome, and they're big supporters of ours now after we've been there for a year. And that's been a valuable piece to it too.
Indeed. And when it comes to your position with the golf courses, you're the director of golf. You've got your head pros at each course with Juan at Shawnee, and then you've got Brian, who just started over at Bobby Nichols. So, as an employee, how do you kind of work with the two facilities along with all the existing stuff that you've got with First Tee and balancing all that?
Yeah, the golf courses, those guys do a great job of running the day to day. My main role is to make sure that they have the merchandise and all the things they need to be successful. Just kind of making sure that they have tools in place, and kind of somebody to bounce ideas off of when they need it. My programming team's grown. We've got Olivia Colton and Will started last year, and he kind of helps me with the golf courses a little bit too. But that's helped delegating the programming side, but it's still kind of overseeing, making sure those guys and Olivia have everything they need to be successful running the program, making sure that we're not getting behind on ordering stuff, and just making sure all the superstars we have the tools to be successful.
Now, when we talk about the First Tee of Louisville and its relationship here with golf courses and all that, I think it's important to note that it's not like every First Tee chapter across the country is like this. You guys are very unique in that sense. But whether it's the golf courses and Shawnee or Bobby Nichols or other things, what separates the Louisville chapter of the First Tee compared to other chapters from across the country and the nuances you have that other places may not?
I'd say that first off is the partnerships in the community. We were just at the Network Summit a few months ago, and a lot of people have issues just getting onto the golf course or getting range usage. From Seneca, Long Run, Quail Chase, every one of our partner locations, they make sure we have what we need. And that's the first step in serving all the youth that we do is, having a place to do it. So yeah, that's very unique for us. I'd say, I might be a little biased, but I think our team is one of the best in the country. I know some chapters that don't have people that maybe have the golf backgrounds that ours have. Olivia played at Bellarmine. Colton went through most of PGM before COVID hit, and then Will's got a sports management degree. Just talking about the program side of things, and I went through PGM, so we've got a little bit more golf knowledge than others. I think it's easier to know golf and learn the life skills part than it is to know life skills and learn the golf part. It's a different learning curve from what I've experienced.
That is a very good piece of advice. I would highly, highly preach that. Good verbiage there, my friend. With the national relationship with First Tee, you guys, you're right, you guys do have a wealth of diverse backgrounds, golf life, whatever it is. But one thing that is cool about the First Tee as a whole is that you guys have the opportunity to meet on a national basis with other chapters from across the country and go to different places. And I know you, Olivia, Deshaun, other members of the team have done that before. So can you kind of talk about those experiences and where you all have gone and then just the conversation points that come up during those meetings?
Yeah, so back early on, Me and Grant Homa went to Level One down in New Orleans and got to meet people. I went to a smaller summit in Dallas a couple years ago. This was the first big network summit that I got to go to, which was, I guess, in Dallas too. It's just great because you get to see that we're not the only ones fighting issues, transportation, getting the clubs and the kids that are underserved, making sure we're getting touching the kids that, need it versus the ones that just have access or parents that are always on social media and see everything we put out. But it also is a kind of a good checkpoint to seeing where we are versus other chapters. And, we are a pretty strong chapter, based on what I talked to people at the network summit. But yeah, just it's awesome getting to connect with people like that, being able to call them and bounce ideas off or whatever it may be, just further your network.
For sure. And networking is one thing that is often brought up within PGA membership that is highly touted and rightfully so. But even though by title you're a director of golf, you're not like a lot of other directors of golf in this section or even the country as a whole. So when it comes to the employment perks about being with First Tee, the easy one right off the bat is the fact that you get to work with kids and get them to have that exposure to golf that they wouldn't have had otherwise. But beyond that, what are some of the opportunities or perks that you and the rest of your teammates have at First Tee that you won't find at other places in the golf industry?
I think the first thing that really comes to mind is, we don't have a, we have an office, but we don't really have a static job. We're doing programming different locations every day of the week. So, we get to travel to different courses, connect with, Tuesdays we're at Longren and Bobby Nichols. So we see Tommy and, Wednesdays we're at Seneca and we see Kevin and his guys. So we get to travel, see different kids in different areas of town. And, it's not being tied down to one club. We get the clubs in hands of kids that historically wouldn't have that opportunity, which is, really the goal. Kids down at Shawnee or, Russell neighborhood, stuff like that, that are right down the street. And, being at these different locations allows us to get in different communities and gives them somewhere local to go instead of having to drive, 30 minutes from Golf House to Shawnee. Which could be obviously a big hurdle. I think the other main, or one of the other main cool perks on top of, our, we have health insurance now and a 401k program and stuff, which is awesome as we've grown. It's perks for the younger staff as we have grown in that area. But also events through donors, things like that, we get to meet some really cool people. Will Zalatoris and Jay Monahan were at the Network Summit because they're big First Tee supporters. I met Justin through our events and being a partnership with the JT Foundation. Steve Flesh did an event for us last year. Emma Talley's coming this year. So just kind of getting to meet people that if you're at a club, it's they kind of got to come to your facility versus, they're supporters of our program.
That's great. And I would have to imagine that people, upon hearing that, would really be interested in how they can get involved. So, not just from an employee point of view, obviously, there are so many jobs you all can fill there. But when it comes to just simply donating or volunteering, what are the pathways that people have to participate within your all's ventures, and how can they do so?
Yeah, so we're actually we're kind of getting rid of the word volunteer. We're gonna change it to ambassadors, because a lot of our volunteers do so much more than just volunteer their time. So we've got an ambassador to coaches and ambassador board members and event ambassadors, things like that. So either donating time, whether it be coaching or helping out with an event we have, monetary donations always are helpful too. Or equipment donations, Shawnee, Bobby Nichols, Seneca, Longrun, Quail Chase, Golf Headquarters all take equipment donations. And most of those get cut down to become clubs for the kids. Because obviously it would be a quite a bill to give kids all brand new junior sets. So most of their junior sets are just cut down clubs. which are donations from people in the community, which, you know, directly impacts the youth, obviously, as well.
Good stuff. And we've already listed off several things that you all are doing this year that people can get involved with, whether it's as an ambassador or getting their kids to participate themselves. So I'll kind of give you the platform on this one. What are some of the events, functions, anything coming up this year that you want to plug?
Spring programming starts here the first week of April. So that's exciting. Our development tour starts mid-April as well, you know, week after the Masters. So we'll crown our first tournament winner right after the Green Jackets put on. Like I said, Tales of the Tin Cup, it's coming May 18th. Emma Talley was very generous. She's going to do a small clinic for our kids, and then it's a dinner and talk at Big Spring. Info on that's on the website already. We're really looking forward. I think she's only the second female we've had behind Nancy Lopez that's done that. Butch and Justin and Steve Flesh and Kenny have all done it in the past too. The Gigi, which is our scholarship scramble where we award outgoing seniors, that's June 10th. They get scholarship dollars to put towards their school. Women in Golf Day, like I mentioned earlier, not sure who's going to be the panelists this year, but it'll be July 9th, the week before Ladies of the Links, which is our big female fundraiser that kind of helps fund the Golf for Girls program. And then our big annual scramble, September 21st, is kind of the typical, like, I just want to donate by playing in a scramble event. Not really, it just kind of goes towards funding programming.
Very cool. And then, you know, it is just astounding. I know I've hit on a few times already, but the amount of opportunities people have now compared to just a few years ago is incredible. So kudos to you all on that front. Is there anything that you are thinking about in 2024 or beyond, like just to keep on adding to this platter of activities? What's on the back burner for later?
Last year we expanded out into Shelby County with Derek Griffiths. So this will be our second year out there, which he's been awesome to work with. We're always looking for ways to connect with more underserved youth, whether it's through community centers or, you know, whatever that road looks like. We got some stuff coming up with Boys and Girls Club this year, things like that. Hopefully we're expanding to, you know, Hardin County, Oldham County, Bullitt County here in the next couple of years. We've got some programming in need already. We've gotten some questions about a Golf for Girls class out at like Long Run in the East End, which is great. That means, you know, that class is making waves and people are looking at it. And really the big pie in the sky thing is a community learning center. We kind of started looking at locations and stuff where that and what that could look like, but somewhere where we would have an indoor green, you know, hitting bays and stuff, classrooms, a library, you know, so kids can come continue working with our coaches to get better, but also continue to become game changers where they can come work on homework or, you know, come to classes, do different things. And give us opportunities to maybe offer some new things on that front as well. That's kind of the big pie in the sky thing for the next couple of years.
Awesome. All of that is outstanding. Again, terrific work by you and everybody else at First Tee Louisville for all the stuff you're doing. It's fantastic to hear all that stuff. I'm very excited to see what's in store, given the fact that everything that's already been done has been so successful. So I've got no doubt that what's to come is going to be even better. But good stuff. We'll move on now to rapid fire so you can no longer worry about having to explain anything or provide a reason for any of the answers that you've given. But from this point on, it's just first thing that comes to your mind. What is your favorite golf course in Kentucky? And just to make it challenging, I'm not going to let you say Shawnee or Bobby Nichols. You have to pick something else.
I'll give you two. Doe Valley, because I grew up and that's where I learned to play. Favorite one up here to play is Hurstbourne. It's not easy. It always gives you a good check of where your game's at.
I don't know, man. Hurstbourne, seems like a piece of cake, dude.
I'm not as good as you,
Oh God. Well, I mean, we're not talking about
though.
two PGA Tour players by any means at this rate. What is your favorite golf course outside of Kentucky?
Honestly, probably the Ritz-Carlton where the PNC is every year in December. That place was a lot of fun to play. Room to miss, but also challenging.
Usually, I would ask people what their dream foursome is. Since I know you pretty well, I want to try to take a guess with what yours is going to be. I'm going to say that your dream foursome would be Olivia, your wife, your dad, and then Ricky Fowler. Is that correct, or would there be any alterations made?
I'd probably roll with that one.
What golf course would y'all go to?
Anywhere?
Anywhere.
Probably Augusta.
If you're playing a normal round of golf, are you going to be walking or riding?
Play a lot better when I walk, so I try to walk as much as I can.
I touched on the fact that you are a Celtics fan, and college basketball I know is not quite as high on your priority list, but if you had to pick one or the other, are you a UK fan or a Louisville fan?
Kentucky. I've softened a little bit on that because I've met some former players and stuff, working in Louisville, but still Kentucky.
Fair enough. What is your favorite vacation spot in the world?
Savannah. We went there last year, or I guess a year and a half ago, and then we went there for our honeymoon. It's just really relaxing and you can walk everywhere, which is nice.
Great spot. What is one place in the world you haven't been to yet that you do want to go see?
Probably Ireland or I want to see some courses and some castles over there. That's kind of the best of both worlds. The original parts of golf and then castles are always cool to see.
Very true. And then last question for you, is this the year where the Celtics get back in the NBA championship circle?
Man, I hope so. It's been rough the last couple weeks. They've been struggling, but I've got faith that with Tatum and Brown as the best two players, they'll get hot here in a few weeks and hopefully go on a run that, win two more games this year than we did last year.
Well, the timing of this podcast is very bad when it relates to our enthusiasm about our NBA teams. Now, granted, they are still very much at the top of the standings, but it has not been a good past week for the Celtics nor the Nuggets. I think had we done this interview this time last month, I think you and I would both be planning on a Celtics Nuggets NBA Finals, which very much still could happen, but the last few days have not given us a whole lot of inspiration.
No, I'm just hoping they're both going through that. We're in the playoffs and kind of the lull right before they get hot and go on runs.
I mean, it's 82 games, and after a while, there's only so much enthusiasm you can have when you know you're going to have a playoff spot and you just want to get to mid-April.
Yeah, so we'll blame it on that for now, and let's just hope we're right.
If the Celtics, let's say it's game seven and they are playing Denver, because that's a nice thing to think about in the NBA Finals, would you be dropping everything to go to get a ticket at the TD Garden?
If I could afford that.
Yeah, that's the problem. I thought about doing it with the Avalanche last year, but I thought better of it.
Yeah, it's a pretty penny to get in playoff games, even in the very top seats. But
Oh yeah.
no, I'm kind of saving. I haven't gone to a game in Boston yet, and we're kind of safe. I told Olivia we're gonna sit close when we do. So
Which arenas have you seen the Celtics play in? I know two of them.
I've been to Amway twice now, which is probably the nicest arena I've been to. Been to Bankers Life or I guess Gainbridge Fieldhouse a bunch now. Saw them in the United Center, and then we caught a game in Dallas. It wasn't the Celtics; it was actually the Nuggets. We won't talk about that game. They were
No.
everybody was sitting out, but those are the four I've been to so far.
That's a good list. Yeah, I mean you've seen some different arenas, you know, got a good mix of history with some teams and non-history with other teams. But yeah, regardless of whether it's the finals or, you know, a regular season game in November, getting into the Garden is a tough ask.
Yeah. And it's like I said, gonna cost a pretty penny with where I want to sit,
All right, here's a question I just thought of for you. You can only have one or the other this year. You can't have both. And let's say that if one of these does happen, you can't get either for 10 years afterwards. Would you prefer that the Celtics win the NBA Finals this year, or would you rather have Ricky Fowler win one of the four majors?
man, that's tough. Ricky's worked really hard to get back to where he is and got a chance to qualify for Augusta, and can't really cheer against a guy that is just such a genuinely good dude. But it's been 15 years since the Celtics won a title. We need one.
Yeah. Well, on the Ricky front, since we've talked plenty NBA, it would be very, very cool as a little side story as we start looking ahead to the 2024 PGA Valhalla. If Ricky continues his little surge he's on and keeps his game going in the right direction, if he could contend at Valhalla next year, 10 years after being right there in the mix when Rory won 9 years ago. Little something to watch out for.
I mean, he's close. It sounds like Jordan and Justin both have said that too. But it's I think golf's better when somebody with such a great following is playing well, and he's kind of been the missing piece for those guys the last couple of years with the struggles.
For sure. Well, maybe who knows? I would like to think that he'll be like playing in the Scottish Open and wouldn't need to play in the Barbasol, but who knows? Maybe he'll come to King Trace this summer and get a little appetite of Kentucky before Valhalla next year.
He seemed to like it the last time he played here, so.
Yeah. We need to get him back here. But Blake, I'll let you go. Thank you so much for the time you spend. And of course, thank you for the work you do to grow golf in the community, not just you, but the entire team as a whole. But before we go, do you just want to drop some website handles, social media handles, so that people can stay abreast with what's going on with the first tee?
Yeah, it's First Tee Louisville on Facebook. I think it's just at First Tee Louisville on Instagram. FirstTeeLouisville.org is the website. Pretty much all of our emails are, like bhardesty@firsttlouisville.org or olivia@firsttlouisville.org. Those are all on the website too. I know you all follow us, so you can probably fact check me on some of these, but yeah, social media, and there's a spot on the website to join our email list. That's kind of the best ways to stay abreast of what's going on and keep in the loop.
Love it. Listeners, go do that. But Blank, thank you again, sir. We'll be talking soon, and thanks again for your time on here.
Yep, sounds good. Thanks for having me, Ethan.